programme at the King's Institute for Sustainable Leadership. And then Lara Allen, who's the director of the Humanitarian Centre, and Steve Wern, finally, who's the director of policy at the Food Standards Agency. So each one will set out this question about how the research relates with the various stakeholders and various users and how that might be thought about. I won't say any more now, other than that we hope that we will end up with a half an hour at the end of a more open discussion where we'll invite you to comment back on what we heard in this morning and ask questions to the panel. So that's the aim of this hour and a half. And it, I think, reflects what Will began the day with in terms of the aspirations of the Global Food Initiative in Cambridge to really think through and these kinds of questions. So with that, I'll invite Lynn to start.
Thank you, Rob. Good afternoon, everybody. I should say before I start, there isn't a huge amount of science in what I'm about to say, but that's because a lot of it is all described in this book. So if you're interested, you can find out the science is in here. Perhaps some of you this morning had a bowl of cornflakes for breakfast. And while you were eating this delicious, nutritious bowl of cereal, which may have been made by Kellogg's, a very well-known company, you might have wondered where in the world your cornflakes came from. And I can tell you that they were very probably, the corn was probably grown in Argentina. It was then probably shipped to Valencia, where the first round of processing takes place, thence to Manchester, and then distributed around the world, which you know very well. Now, the sustainability team at Kellogg's have been looking at this supply chain very carefully, and one of the things they've been doing is using something called the Cool Farm Tool, which is an industry standard greenhouse gas calculator for farm scale greenhouse gas emissions, to just consider whether it would be better environmentally to move the corn growing to Spain. And what I'm talking about is the greenhouse gas calculator, which is called the Cool Farm Tool, rather than the result of their decision making, which I can talk to you about afterwards. The Cool Farm Tool is owned by the Cool Farm Alliance. Here you see the founding partners of the Cool Farm Alliance and the members, some very big companies overseeing some very well-known brands, fertilizer companies, food companies, and these organizations have come together to develop what they want to be the industry standard sustainability metric tool. The Cool Farm Tool is easy to use, it's standardized, and at the moment it only calculates greenhouse gas emissions. What's good about it for these companies is that it's scientifically robust. People like me and other teams of scientists around the world are developing the models and tools that underlie it. It's going on its own. How do I stop it from going on its own? Perhaps I'll speed up.
Do you want to take it back?
Yeah. Do you know how to do that?
Oh, looks like you're doing it.
But if I just start it again, it's going to run on its own again.
You have to go back.
I'm just going to see how it goes. So we go through here. Okay. The Cool Farm Alliance have decided that they would like to develop some new metrics for the Cool Farm Tool, and these are they: water, biodiversity, and economics, which is about the costs of different mitigation measures. And the thing we're working on is biodiversity, measuring on-farm biodiversity, which I have to stress is important to these big companies, which is why I'm here. So when you talk about measuring on-farm biodiversity, it's many things. It's insects, it's birds, it's flowers, trees, habitats, the genetic diversity of the crops and livestock you produce. All of these things are encompassed in this term, biodiversity. Really, there are two different ways you could think about trying to measure that in order to make improvements or report on sustainability at corporate level. One is to take an outcome-based approach, and this is where you actually measure the biodiversity on your farms. You could count the animals and plants. You can measure proxies for biodiversity, such as habitat diversity or length of hedgerows, amount of woodland edge, for instance, birds coming in and habitats for particular types of bird. This is possible, but very difficult, especially on the scale of global supply chains. So whilst you know what your outcomes are if you do that, it's pretty difficult to scale up. It's complex and expensive. The other approach is action-based, and this is where you measure, instead of the biodiversity itself, the things which farmers are doing which might be assumed to help biodiversity. For example, area under agri-environment management, or specific interventions, buffer strips along waterways, approaches to farm management like tillage and agrochemical use. Now, these things are easy to measure because farmers measure them anyway. They know how they're managing their farm. You can just ask them. But the problem with that is that we don't really know whether those things are helping biodiversity in a given place or not, so we're unsure of the outcomes. Now, the Cool Farm Alliance, wanting to measure biodiversity, had come across this tool, which is called the Gaia Biodiversity Yardstick, built by a consultancy in the Netherlands. There are one or two other tools around the world like this, but not so many. And this took the action-based approach. It's available online. It's been used already for hundreds of farms. It just asks a set of very simple questions. Which of these actions are you taking? And each of the actions you take were suggested by biodiversity experts as things that would be good in the Netherlands, and you get a point for each one. So it's in the easy but unsure of outcomes category. At the same time, in the zoology department in Cambridge, I and other members of my group have been working for many years now compiling evidence on the effects of different actions on biodiversity. So we've done this for European farmland, and in this kind of resource, you have a list of all the different actions you could take and a systematically compiled summary of all the evidence that exists in the literature on whether that actually has an effect on biodiversity or not. So this is a summary of evidence. We've done it for amphibians, bats, birds, and farmland, and we also have reptiles and forests. So we have a whole set of resources which you can find on this conservation evidence website. And the last stage of that, which we've been working on for the last couple of years, is to take the summarised evidence, which is messy and complex, and turn it into some very simple categories as to whether things are beneficial or not at the overall scale. That's hard to do, so we do it with a process of expert assessment. So this is not expert judgment, but expert assessment of summarised evidence. The process we follow is to bring together a wide group of experts from different areas of interest, including research, NGOs and industry, and they individually read the summarised evidence. They then score each intervention or action for effectiveness and certainty, and then we run two rounds or three rounds of scoring where everyone sees the other scores and rethinks and comments and scores again, always independently. This is known as the Delphi process. It's known to be something that improves expert judgment. The final stage is that we place the interventions into the categories I showed you before, and then the group of experts all see how it came out, and if they disagree, no, this really is not going to work, this is wrong, then they score again. So we have quite a rigorous process. And it seemed to us very sensible to combine the biodiversity yardstick, which lists actions, with our assessment of evidence to come up with what we now call in Cool Farm Nature, which is action-based, therefore easy to roll out to global supply chains, but with evidence of outcomes. And all we do in order to do that is take the actions that are selected by experts to be good for farms, in this case in Northern Europe, and we just weight the scores with the evidence assessment. So if something's beneficial, it gets a few extra points. If it comes out of our assessment as being likely to be ineffective or harmful, it's excluded from the scoring altogether. And we've done this exercise for several different species groups, or taxa, or functional groups, which you'd find on farmland. So we break this down into birds, beneficial insects, including pollinators, aquatic life like amphibians and dragonflies, and soil fauna, which have some benefits for soil fertility. And there's actually 10 different elements of biodiversity that we've done the scoring for. We've now built a prototype of this tool. This is what it looks like. It's a set of questions, basically 31, fairly straightforward, multiple choice questions, tick box, do you do this or not? And what you get at the end of that for each farm is a set of kind of speedometers, which is four different components of biodiversity, which we don't combine into one score because we think they're quite different. You have the diversity of your products, which is the crop and livestock genetic diversity, production practice, small natural habitats, and larger natural areas and landscape. But you also, and this is completely unique to this tool, you get a breakdown of your score for your different species groups. So if you happen to be a farmer that's growing insect-pollinated crops, for instance, you might be especially keen on the beneficial invertebrate score. And you can see from playing around with this tool how you might improve that, which actions are known and weighted with evidence to benefit invertebrates in your part of the world. So we have only done this for northwestern Europe, and that's because our evidence summary is restricted to northwestern Europe for now. And the final thing you get is a breakdown of your land use, the land use that you've dedicated to nature management, either productive areas under nature conservation agreement or different habitats, woody habitats, wet habitats, grass and flower habitats. So all of this will give the companies who go on to use this a really good idea of what their farms are doing for biodiversity relative to what the best thing they could do is in that context. The future for me involves this kind of landscape, which is intensive olive groves, and you'll see why in a moment. The first immediate future is that we're going to test the Northern European prototype, and that's going to be done by Kellogg's and our partners in the Netherlands and ADAS, which is an Agricultural Development and Advisory Service in the UK, this summer. We have just been funded a project by the Nature Conservancy in the US, in California, to complete the whole evidence summary and assessment for Mediterranean farmland, which is why I put the olive groves up. And that's going to be not just the Californian, but also the South American, the South African, the European, and the Australian Mediterranean group, which is lots of perennial tree crops. Different actions, different evidence base, leading to a tool that can be applied in those farmed areas. In the longer term, as a researcher, what most excites me about this is the huge data sets we will get on biodiversity management and land use across supply chains. The Cool Farm Tool Greenhouse Gas Calculator is used on over 10,000 farms already. So these are big numbers of farms that these companies can just say, we want you to do this, please, so that we can report it. And we will get some fantastic data from those farms. We'll also have a chance, because there's also a water footprint metric and a greenhouse gas metric, to properly understand the trade-offs among the different sustainability measures that the Cool Farm Tool will be able to get some idea of, or will be able to measure. And finally, ultimately, perhaps by 2025, we'll be looking at improved conditions for wildlife on much of the world's farmland. It's quite difficult to get a precise estimate on how much of the world's farmland is overseen by these companies that are in the Cool Farm Alliance, but it's big. It's a big proportion. These are big companies with big supply chains. So we started with a healthy breakfast at the beginning of the day. By the end of the day, you might find yourself eating olives in your martini. And perhaps now you'll think about the conditions for the wildlife that was finding itself on the farmland where those olives were grown and how the companies are managing it or could improve the management to create better conditions for those species. I'd just like to thank a few people. These names here are all of the people who've been involved with the expert assessment process that fed into the Cool Farm Nature tool. These are funders and partners. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much. I realise that I neglected to introduce myself. I'm Rob Doubleday from the Centre for Science and Policy. When you ask a question, could you please introduce yourself too? I think we have time for one or two quick questions, sort of clarification, so I can see two hands, and then perhaps hold over a question to the end.
You could.
How do you reflect that in the answers to some of your questions that you've put out?
So just to fill in people who aren't familiar with the ecological focus areas, in the European Common Agricultural Policy, the latest reformed version, there is now a compulsory requirement for some greening measures to be taken in order for farmers to get their basic subsidy. It only applies to arable farms. It doesn't apply to livestock farms, so that's only half the farmers in some parts of the world. And one of those greening measures is ecological focus areas, which has within it some of the options that are included in this tool, for which we have evidence on whether they work or not. As far as I know, the farmers can choose which options they take, so they could use this tool to inform them on which would be a better option if they really cared about wildlife. One of the options in this country for ecological focus areas is commercially managed peas and beans. So in fact, you can do your ecological focus area and tick the box without doing anything specifically for wildlife. You just make a shift in your crop mix and you grow more beans. I don't know if that answers your question. I would say this tool will be useful for looking at the possible effects of the different ecological focus area options.
Yeah, is it a brief question of clarification now?
Keith Virgo, Tropical Agriculture Association. There was one, the tick boxes for farmers. There's nothing about tillage. I mean, do you bring in no-till cultivation, conservation agriculture to increase the soil fauna?
Yes, there is. There is in the tool. We've got a very streamlined tool down to 31 questions. I think we started with about 90 questions. Right. But tillage is in there. So there's a set of questions which are in production practices. Some of those are how you use agrochemicals and which you use. And others are how you look after the soil, so cover crops, whether you, different types of tillage you could use, it is in there. And it creates a score specifically for soil fauna, but also for other organisms that might benefit from it.
Great, thank you. And so other questions can be held over for discussion at the end. Thanks, Lynn. And okay. Gemma Cranston now from the Cambridge Institute for Sustainability.